prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I am here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events on Friday, February 7th, 2014. And an interesting day in the markets, an interesting day in the news, and we got lots to talk about today. And if you'd like to join in on our conversation, you can call us at 1-800-596-8191. That's 1-800-596-8191. If you have any questions for us, for Alfred and me. So give us a call. I know you're there. We're around the world. I can't tell you how many radio programs we broadcast on. And I do want to thank each and every listener for tuning in and supporting the program and Discount Gold and Silver. Today is it's always nice to report when gold is up. Took a while for it to get going this morning, but it's up 980. 980 on the day at 1268. You have silver up 9 cents at 2014. Platinum was up 8 at 1389, and you have palladium down a buck at 7.15, and we have the USDX. It didn't like the jobs report today, down 0.25 at 80.65, and crude oil, something's going on. I don't think it's just a shortage of propane that's going on, but oil's up 220. That's big, $100, 104 for crude oil. So something's brewing. Let's go ahead and get to the paper markets today. Now, you got to love them. I mean, you talk about the way they can spin the news. They can spin good days with bad days and good news and bad news. I mean, you got to love it. Now, they're saying the reason the stock market was up 165 points because of the weak job loss, because of the job data was so weak this morning. They're going to see the Fed not cutting the stimulus. It's just like, it just cracks me up. The Dow up 165 points, 15,793. Yeah, the NASDAQ up 68 at 41.25, and the S&P up 24 at 1797, and a little bit of pressure on the 10-year yield down 0.03 at 2.68%. They're good, Al, aren't they?
Oh, I don't even know that they're good. They're just persistent, and they're shameless. You understand? It's like some of these comedians that get up on the stage, and everybody just, woo, woo. It doesn't matter. Some of these guys, they'll get up there, and they'll tell their jokes anyway. It's just, you know, it's like that with the government. They don't get the message. They don't care about the message. They're going to keep on with some peculiar story or another to explain things.
I said yesterday, Washington released those numbers to Wall Street yesterday. So, you know, they were able to pump up the numbers yesterday. They were able to carry it through no matter what happened. You know, they were able to carry it through. So, I mean, I do believe these numbers are released prior to, you know, this morning, and everybody gets positioned, and they know how it's going to unfold.
Everybody gets the script.
Everybody gets the
script. Before they do the show. That's what it comes down to. And they're just sending out the script, so we're all on the same page now. You got that? This is how many jobs we're going to claim were created this month. Okay? And or at least last month. And
but
you, okay. How much you say again? Yeah, well, okay. They get the numbers. They want to get everybody, get the story straight.
You know, what's funny, though, is they talk about, and we'll go ahead and get a little deeper in the report, but, you know, they talked about, they blamed bad weather on the poor job report, but yet they're talking about how good construction was. Well, when you have bad weather, construction is the first thing that gets hit.
Yeah, I understand. They're talking about, again, we mentioned it the other day, they are blaming it on unseasonably cold weather. When was the last time you were in a month that was not unseasonably cold or unseasonably hot or unseasonably mild or unseasonably windy or unseasonably still? It's always unseasonable, all right? Virtually every month. When was the last time you heard somebody say, you know, this month was just about the way it was exactly expected to go? There were no extremes. It's always like that. You know? And you cannot assume that an economy like that of the United States or jobs or industries or anything else is going to just roll over and melt because the weather is not exactly the same every day out of the month. I understand we've had some interesting weather. We've had some cold snaps and rusted. You know, it isn't the first time in the history of the world. We're a fairly resilient species. We've gone through ice ages, all right, without completely folding up. I think we can probably get through a couple of days or weeks of unseasonably cold weather in the wintertime because it's always unseasonable. So it just doesn't make sense. That's my point. It doesn't make good sense. I won't say it's completely wrong, but it doesn't make good sense.
Well, it doesn't make good sense when they come around and say construction's, you know, great. And yeah, that's the first thing that the bad weather hits is construction because you can't work outside. And I don't think there are that many people that are remodeling their inside of their homes and building out office complexes and shopping malls and so forth. I mean, we do have a lot of apartments that are being built, and you can say that, but, you know, it wouldn't have improved. They wouldn't have increased those employments because those people would have already been employed in the apartment complexes. Now, they've been employed for a while. So if they built the structure in the fall or the summer and tuning and finishing the inside. So, yeah, it doesn't make sense. What I think was interesting is the revision to December. They only revised it by 1,000, and people were expecting it to go from the 70 level, no, I mean, it was higher than 70, up into 100 and like 120, 124, and they didn't do it. So, you know, I find that interesting, and I think that alone should have tanked the markets today. But because revisions are always bigger than just 1,000 points, when you got a license to lie, you do.
Well, not only that, people pay attention to the news the first time they hear it. And when it gets revised a month later, they don't pay any attention to it.
Oh, yes, they do, Al. And markets do pay attention to things like that. And
to revisions a month after the fact? It's like announcing that, you know, there was a skirmish in the Civil War and it was won by the Union rather than the Confederacy.
Usually will help with the current numbers. And when you don't have those revisions, now, I could see the market up 165 if they did revise that number to 124 like they were expecting, and then you had the bad number today at 113,000. Yeah, I could see the market up at 165, but not when there was absolutely no change to last month and this low number. Market should have been down 165 points, not up.
Well, it's like they complain about some of the voting machines and how easy it is to hack into voting the electronic voting machines and change votes. And they can change votes from just positive to negative. Like it's easy to reverse the if it says Smith won by 10,000 votes and Jones lost by 10,000 votes, they can switch it. Where Smith now lost by 10,000 votes and Jones won by 10,000 votes. You know, it's just a conspiracy theory. It's kind of just an oddball remark. But the numbers, you know, if we could just rely on the numbers, you know, if they would just tell us the truth where we could count on it, that would be one thing. And this is just a government by deception. By means of lies, trying to maintain public confidence. And how long? It just doesn't seem to work properly because inevitably the lies come out. They are shameless. They persist. They don't care if they've been caught in a lie. If you don't believe that one, here's another one. I got another one for you. All right? Didn't like that one? All right. We got a third lie for you. How many lies do you want? Finally, the government keeps at it long enough, and finally people say, all right, fine. I'll believe we are prosperous right now, and the nation is the strongest it's ever been. They keep telling me long enough, I suppose I might believe it, but I haven't yet. And I assume that the people in the audience, you haven't yet believed the fictions coming out of Washington, D.C., it's just, there ought to be a law against it. You know, I'm not in favor of many more laws. I think we got more than enough laws, but there ought to be a law where a politician could be held liable, and not just at the ballot box, but liable in the sense that he can be sued if he tells lies. Should be true for everybody in Congress, everyone in the Senate. Should be true for the president and all of the prosecuting attorneys in the federal courts and the judges. There would be a law against the government lying to us. And instead, the way the laws work is the government, police for example, are free to lie to us. But we can go to jail for lying to them. It's just all, you know, it's backwards. They act as if the most important thing in the world is government, and the truth of the matter is the government is one of the least important things. It wants us to believe it's important. It wants us to act like it's important. It wants us to salute and execute. When they speak, we're supposed to jump. But the truth is, the way this country was set up and intended was supposed to be that the government served the people. They didn't control them. They didn't rule them. They served the people. The government was our public servant, not our public master. Government wants no part of that, of course, so here we are, caught in a situation where our former servants have become our masters, and it's not going to change until we stand up and say, enough of that. All right? You people in government are actually going to have to serve the people. Not yourselves, not special interests. You're going to have to do us right for the American people. It's a peculiar idea, Melody, and I don't expect it to catch on very soon, but it's still, it might catch on. We'll watch and see.
Perhaps.
Probably, maybe.
Perhaps, maybe.
Yeah.
But here's some interesting news with Blythe Masters, J.P. Morgan's Chase. I thought I heard this morning that she actually had to turned down this position, but the and so maybe this was yesterday's article. I'll have to find something, but the woman who was in charge of JP Riven. Morgan's commodity trading, right? She was going over to join an advisory committee of the CFTC. She's only 44 years old, and she's a veteran of the swaps industry. And she's going to be sitting on a global markets committee that's supposed to meet next week to discuss the overseas applications of the CFTC rules. The committee also includes executives from Citicorp and Goldman Sachs, and banks have largely opposed the CFTC's efforts to extend its swaps rules overseas. She's been with J.P. Morgan since she's been in her 20s, and she helped breathe life into the market for credit default swaps to shift risk off the bank's books. Now, again, this is an old report, and I thought because there was J.P. Morgan, from what I understood, is they were selling off their commodities portion, and there was some sort of a lawsuit going on involving her, and I thought I heard this morning that she had actually turned it down. But I'll have to follow up on this and report on this on Monday. But, you know, it's just another sign how they have their fingers into the commodities. And, you know, they're all the same folks. You know, now J.P. Morgan. Well, actually, here it is. She quit the CFTC panel. So I was right. A day after her appointment was disclosed.
A day after her appointment was disclosed, she quit.
She quit.
When was she appointed?
Well, one day before she stepped down because the company's sale of its physical commodities unit will keep her occupied.
Uh-huh. And the reason the stock market goes up, down, or sideways is mm-hmm. because of the unseasonable weather. It's just a coincidence that she's quitting the day after it's exposed that she was on this committee.
JP,
it implies, at least the language implies, that she wanted to maintain some secrecy mm-hmm. about her position on that committee.
JP,
and
yeah.
once she lost that, she said, "All right, I'm out of here."
They JP Morgan is selling a division that deals in assets such as metals and oil. As government watchdogs examine whether federally backed lenders should be involved in such markets. Master's appointment drew a criticism from Twitter users who questioned the propriety of her advising the regulator of futures and swaps.
Twitter. She was knocked off by the
Twitters. She was lived by the Twitterers.
mm-hmm. So they concerned themselves with the hackers and the anonymous group and the terrorists, but the ones who will get you for sure are the Twitterers. They're the ones to watch out for.
Yeah, amazing. But J.P. Morgan, they agreed back in July to pay $410 million to settle the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, in which they claimed that the firm manipulated power markets. Hey, we could have told you that 30 years ago.
I understand. What I'd like to know, did they say how much J.P. Morgan made off that manipulation?
I don't have that number right off the top.
I understand, and I'm just willing to bet you that $410 million is nothing more than sales tax.
That's right.
It's the equivalent of adding an extra couple of percent sales tax to the profits they made off the deal.
Yep.
You know, I saw something just lately. Someone got slapped, I believe, for $1 billion. Huge fine. But they also grossed $10 billion. Well, you know, if I could gross $10 billion and all I had to worry about was paying a fine of $1 billion, I don't think I'd be complaining a whole lot. You know? Big deal. I got to keep $9 billion. I'd rather have kept $10, but just the same, you know, you hustle $10 billion and you get to keep $9 billion. What are you going to cry about? Mm-hmm. Someone should be going to jail. That's what should happen. These things should not be just civil suits per se. There ought to be criminal penalties, and they ought to be slapping these. And instead, if they get slapped at all, it's just a slap on the wrist, and civil penalties are amping up, but even there. They need a penalty that reflects about three times what their gross was for a criminal act. I guarantee that'll put the fear of God into them. To go over and steal $1 billion and you got to pay $3 billion back, That will attract the attention of the board of directors and the CEO and all the presidents and vice presidents in the corporation, and they're going to say, no, I don't think we should do this. We get caught. It's going to cost us three times as much as we make. It's a bad gamble, bad risk. But as it works right now.
Well, it'll be interesting to see where she lands up at, whether she's going to stay with J.P. Morgan. And if she's still employed by them, if she turned down that position. But she did lay the groundwork for a lot of what happened to AIG. And so, I mean, she's...
Well, if I recall correctly, and I might not, but isn't she the one who was essentially the originator for the derivatives concept?
Yeah. She.
Well, you can tell her, give her, drop her an email if she's unemployed. Tell her she can be on the program on Wednesdays. We'll put her on for a segment every Wednesday. How's that? I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody? Do we have a special for people today?
We're going to continue. You know, folks, the mint state coins, I mean, the premium on those are so little. They're a steal at these prices, and they give you so much privacy, performance, protection. They're guaranteed to be what they are. Someone can't, when you go to sell them, if you can't sell them back to me and you had to sell them, someone locally, they can't tell you it's not what it is. So you get a lot of protection there. And with the spread between a Gold Eagle is selling for about $1,335. You can buy Mint State 62 $20 gold pieces for $1,465. I mean, come on, folks. They're great coins. They're beautiful coins. They're pre-33 coins. So if you want to diversify and get into the market, now is the time to do it. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com and make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter.
Got an article here from the Daily Ticker. It's the headline is The Great Unrotation. Investors rush out of stocks into bonds after tough January. Yeah, that's headline. And here we'll read a little of the text. It's January.
They're really dumb, aren't they?
I don't know. It's
but go ahead.
You got to write something. You know, you get to put, we got to write something for this. We got to fill in the space one way or another. Put some words in there and make them sound semi-coherent. But it says January was a rough month for the U.S. stock market, a terrible month for emerging markets, and good for bonds. Like moths to a flame, mutual fund investors responded accordingly, taking a record amount of money out of stocks and moving much of it into bonds. For the week ended February 5th, a record $18.8 billion came out of U.S. equity mutual funds and ETFs. This is according to Lipper. In the same time frame, $2.7 billion came out of related funds, while a record $10.7 billion flowed into bond funds and ETFs. Now, here's where I have a little bit of a problem with this. We've got $18.8 billion coming out of U.S. equity, mutual funds, and ETFs. $2.7 billion coming out of related funds. That's a total of $21.5 billion coming out of the mutual funds, the equity markets, and so on. And then you've got $21 billion coming out. And you've got $10.7 billion flowing into bond funds and ETFs. And another outfit, Citicorp, calculated that $24 billion flowed out of U.S. equity funds and $6 billion out of ETFs and $13 billion into funds. Again, we've got about $30 billion out of the equities market and only $13 billion going into bond funds. So the question is, where'd the other half of that money go? And do you follow what I'm saying? $20 billion, according to one estimate, $21.1 billion came out of the equity market, and $10 billion flowed into the bond funds. Implies about 50% of the money that came out of the equities went into the bond funds. The other estimate has higher numbers. They're calculating about $30 billion out of the equities and $13 billion into the bond funds. So where'd the rest of the money go, Melody? Half went to the bonds, I'll give you that, but where'd the other half go?
Where do you think it went?
If they're going to bonds for safety, presumably that's their motive, is they're going to bonds for safety, which implies the other half may have also gone into precious metals. Now, I'm not telling you that's true. I'm just saying that it went somewhere. I doubt that these people used it to stuff their mattress. If it went out of stocks and went into bonds in general, if that was the general trend, half of it went into bonds. Where'd the other half go? There's some more of the article.
Well, I'm sure some of that went into cash, but even half of the half is a sizable amount.
I agree. It does indicate that people are becoming concerned insofar as they are going to safe havens. It suggests that there's going to be an increasing demand for gold. And if they continue to go for safe havens, it's evidence that there are people with significant amounts of money that are that don't trust the economy as it sits right now. They're looking for safe havens. One of them is gold. Another one's silver. Another one's bonds. But even there, you know, let me finish with the article and we'll talk a little bit about bonds. It says, however you measure it, the point here is that all figures for periods are record highs for the weak data and represent sharp reversal from 2013 trends when $172 billion flowed into the U.S. equity funds, and that $172 billion, that helped hold the stock markets up, the first year of positive flows since 2007. It's a mistake to draw too many conclusions from just a week or even a quarter of fund flow data, but it does seem like there was a great unrotation after the January sell-off with money rushing out of stocks and back into the perceived safety of bonds. I'm really fascinated just to see the use of the word perceived. Right? The author of the article, and this is in the Daily Ticker, they're saying, well, bonds are perceived to be safe, but by using that word, perceived, he's calling doubt. He's calling to our attention the possibility that the perception is false. During all this great money rushing, incidentally, the price of gold rose from $1,200 to almost $1,270. We're talking about actually since the first of the year, an increase of 5.8% since the first of the year. Do you think bonds are safe, Melody?
No, I don't.
No, neither do I.
But, you know, what's interesting is what people don't get. As all this money in and all this money out and all this money going there and all this money going there, here and there, it's all controlled by the Federal Reserve. I mean, they make people do what they want them to do. And you have this mass money exchanging hands to whatever sector of the market they need. And it's all ruled by the Federal Reserve. That's what just makes it so incredible. That there are no fundamentals. Oh, they talk about, the job report didn't have anything to do with the markets being up today. It's the earnings coming out of these companies. But are the earnings really there?
Yeah.
You know, they want them to be there. You have Apple spending I don't know how many more billions of dollars buying back their own shares, saying, no, this is a good deal because, you know, we're looking forward to the future. I talked to one of my clients last night. He's in a high-powered position, works with a company that's in the Dow. He says, you know, everybody says how great it is. He says, but at Christmas we get our bonuses. He says, this was the worst bonus we had in 10 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, people do how they're forced, and we talk about the herd mentality. It's part of it, and the Federal Reserve controls much of it.
You're talking about Apple. Apple is buying its own stock.
Yes.
Is that because Apple they think their stock is being sold at bargain prices right now? Or are they buying it at the current price in order to try to prevent it from falling lower?
Absolutely.
Last second answer.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I guess.
That's not what they're going to say.
No, that's not what they're
going to say. They're going to say the first one.
Say, this is the best deal in America. But maybe it's just an attempt to...
They all
effectively
do
manipulate the market.
Heck,
by
Apple.
buying their stock at an exaggerated price in order to at least prevent it from falling any further.
I mean, Apple borrows money to pay the dividends.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's mind-boggling.
Mind-boggling, but it's
mind-boggling how this keeps together.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's mind-boggling that no one does anything to stop it.
Huh?
You would think that there would be
some
way where someone in a regulatory position would be able to keep these markets running on the up and up, and no one's even trying.
Mm.
The markets are being manipulated with government approval in order to maintain public confidence in the economy.
But they know what will happen if they do. You are talking about the collapse of the world system,
mm-hmm.
of the global financial system.
I understand.
So it's kind of like, I'm not gonna, you know, touch that. I'll let somebody else get, you know.
And what's the lesson to that? The lesson is that there are people in positions of power who recognize that the system is so fragile that it's vulnerable right now. It's not strong enough to necessarily resist. And we're talking about the global economy, including the U.S. economy, which is a support of fundamental idea we advocate on this program, which is protect yourself against these possible crises in the U.S. or global markets. You protect yourself, one of the ways, gold, with gold and silver. And it, you can believe us if you want to or not, but when you see what the governments are doing and what people in positions of power are doing, it's evidence that our advice is reasonable. This is not just, you know, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. It's more than that. We're trying to communicate something that people in positions of power, they may not talk about it the way we do, but nevertheless, they recognize that what we're saying is essential, is effect, is primarily true. Right? I won't argue that we certainly don't know all, we don't have all the information. We can't tell everything. We can't tell the truth about everything because we don't have access to all that truth. But people who do behave in ways that are consistent with what we're, with what we suspect is going on. So, you know, just have more evidence. People need to protect yourself because the entire system is vulnerable now. Right now. It's sufficiently vulnerable where, in theory, it could collapse tomorrow or a month from now or before the end of this year. We don't know when the time is, but for the moment, at least, that vulnerability is real, likely to persist. And if things go badly, you're going to wish you were prepared. You know, better be prepared, or you're going to certainly wish you were. What's next, Melody?
Well, you know, I got a little report here. The NSA collects less than 30% of calling data from Americans, despite the agency's massive daily efforts to sweep up the bulk of U.S. phone records. Two of the major newspapers reported earlier in this week. And, you know, it's just typical, and I'm bringing this up to relate to what you've been saying, is people look at something like this. Oh, that's only less than 30%. No big deal. Folks, I don't care if it's less than 10%. It's a big deal because they shouldn't be monitoring our calls and our phone records and calling data on all of us. And it's just the same way with the markets. And it's, you know, it's.
What do you think the chances are that they are only monitoring 30% of our calls? And I don't, they didn't say monitoring, they said collecting.
All right,
they're only collecting 30% of our calls. What do you think the chances are that's true?
Oh, it's probably more.
I would agree. I would be almost amazed if the National Security Agency didn't make it their business to have the capacity to collect the data from 100% of the calls. If I had to guess, and it only guess, and it could be wrong, but if I had to guess, when they come out and say, gee, we can only collect 30% of the calls, well,
that's half.
I think it's crowd control. I think it's just crowd control. I think they're just trying to say, well, we're really not spying that much on you people. And there may be some truth to that, because the truth is, you know, 100% of the telephone calls, I guarantee no one wants to listen to 100% of my telephone calls. I don't want to listen to 100% of my telephone calls, and I have to listen to them. You understand that? There's not that much being said. It's the sort of thing where I understand that there are technical limits. There are practical limits where no matter how advanced the government's capabilities may be, there's just more data here than anyone can sort through. Everybody who's got an internet connection has more email than they can read.
That doesn't really make it right.
No, I know it doesn't make it right. I'm not advocating that it's right, but I'm just making a bet that if they can catch one call, I'll bet they can catch 100 out of 100.
And I want to scream.
30%, who's going to prove otherwise?
And I want to scream every time I hear somebody say, well, I'm not doing anything wrong, so, you know, let them listen.
Like, well, you'll see.
And I've said that myself many, many years ago. I can remember saying, you know,
you
in my 20s.
Doing things, you mean it's been that long since you're doing everything right? Is that what you're telling me right now, Melody? Huh?
I can remember that train of thought in my younger days.
Now, I was always guilty of something, so I never had that train of thought. even back in my teenage years, I was up to something. So I said, no, you better not be spying on me. I am going to take a break, however, and Melody's going to take a break, and we'll be back in a moment on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku-band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. And what's next, Melody?
Japan.
Japan?
Japan assures the U.S. John Kerry, Secretary of State, that they will calmly respond with China to the actions by China that have increased, their tensions have increased between the two Asian powers. And, of course, it's the air defense zone that China in the East China Sea. And so Japan comes out and assures the U.S. of a calm response. They will respond calmly to actions by China.
So what does that tell us?
They're lying.
No, it doesn't. I mean, the implication is this. Japan is assuring the United States that it will react calmly to whatever provocations come out of China. So they're not going to start a nuclear war all on their own. And I say nuclear war, and I don't think Japan has any nuclear weapons, but who knows. But they are assuring the United States they're not going to do anything irrational, unreasonable, or sudden, which tells us that if they have to reassure the United States has apparently told Japan that they don't trust them right now. Japan is saying, no, you can trust us. We're okay. You know, we're not going to do anything stupid. This implies that the United States is not backing Japan 100%. It implies that despite John Kerry's claims that we're going to honor our treaty obligations, the truth of the matter is we don't want to get between Japan and China. And therefore, we are, who knows, sitting there in a position where, in theory, the treaty with Japan obligates us to give 100% support to Japan. Because I don't doubt that the treaty was originally drafted at a time when it was supposed to protect Japan against communist China. It was our intent of that treaty that we would protect Japan and we would give Japan 100% of our support against the evil Chinese Empire. But now we're doing so much business with China that they're not so evil anymore. Right? And we are caught in circumstances where we are perhaps 60% in favor of Japan, but we're 40% in favor of China. We're caught in the middle on this thing. And the truth of the matter is, if Japan has to reassure us that they're not going to do anything foolish, it's evidence that our loyalties have shifted. So we've got another article here that deals with, here's something that touches on China. And this is written by Michael Snyder. Michael was on the program back, it's been a couple of months since he's been on here, but Michael is prolific in the articles he writes about the economy, national, global, and world politics. He's a prolific writer. Just amazing to me. The headline is, top advisor to Chinese government calls for a global currency to replace the U.S. dollar. Former chief economist at the World Bank, Justin Yifu Lin, is advising Chinese government that the time has come for a single global currency. He says the U.S. dollar is the root cause of global financial and economic crises, and that moving to a global supercurrency will bring much-needed stability to the global financial system. Central Bank of China has already announced it's no longer stockpiling more U.S. dollars. So what's the point to all of this? Is this just some... Do you think this is a reflection of China's policy? Has China finally come out and they're going to have one of their economists kind of step out from behind the bushes and say, guess what? We need a single global currency. And people will say, well, is that the Chinese policy or is that just this one economist talking? Is it one economist talking or is it China's policy to start advocating a single global currency, Melody?
Both.
Well, yeah. Even that, though, you're conceding the possibility that China's pushing in that direction. But I have my doubts.
You have your doubts that they're going to a single global currency?
Yeah, who's going to run it?
Well, again, I believe we already have a basket of currencies for trade purposes, and the way all countries in the U.S. is probably, abuses it just as much as any other country is they manipulate the currencies. Lower currencies help trade, help their exports. So I think these currencies and the exchanges and the way people travel and the interconnection, it does have to come to a single global currency. But I don't think it's going to be any one country's currency that will be the global currency. I believe the basket of currencies will be expanded. More countries will come in there. And I believe gold will be placed in that basket of currencies to stabilize. And, they will adjust within that basket of currencies. And now, then we have a second tier of currency for people. I mean, you're going to have that for governments and for trade, and then you're going to have another type of global currency for everybody else. So I do believe there will be a two-tier, and we might even see a two-tier over here. It just depends on, you know, how it is set up and the fees and everything involved. But
I think if you want a single global currency, and if anyone is truly interested in trying to stabilize the global financial system, all right, again, this economist said we need a single currency to bring much needed stability to the global financial system. There is already a single global currency that will stabilize the whole system, and that's gold.
That's gold.
They don't want it stabilized. They don't want it stabilized. They want another phony baloney fiat currency, and I don't care if you put it together with a dozen currencies in the basket or 100 currencies in the basket. It makes no difference. They still want to be able to manipulate the currency and inflate it so they can wipe out government debt.
But the time
they don't want stability, and that's why they don't want gold. Those people
time,
who want stability want gold.
But the time, if you believe in a one world order, if you believe in a one world government, you have to believe in a single global currency. And
I
agree, gold should be. But I don't think it's going to work that way. I think it will work more similar in a basket of cards. But gold will be in there. What people don't understand now, I think gold is the main player. I just think we don't know how it's going to be played, when it's going to be played, and how much of it's going to be played. But gold is there.
Oh, I understand. It's all been there for
4,000 years. And it hasn't gone away.
We can't get around that. But the government doesn't want gold there.
I know ours don't.
The public does. The people do. They are going to understand anyone who's given the opportunity. I can give you $1,500 in cash, or I can give you an ounce of gold right now. Let's suppose that's you get to choose. You want the $1,500 in cash. You want the ounce of gold, but you can't spend either for 10 years. Which one are you going to take? And you got to be crazy to take the cash. All right? You must take the gold because that will almost certainly appreciate in value, and the cash will certainly decline in value. Mm-hmm. The government wants to be able to inflate and manipulate currencies in order to create incentives, even compulsions for people to do certain things. We're going to fund this business over here or this industry. We're going to defund this industry over here, this business over here. Some get the money, some don't get the money. The only way you can do that effectively is you have to be able to print the money yourself.
And you can
the mass,
do that.
Whoever can do that. It's like Rothschild made the comment back a couple hundred years ago. I don't care who writes the laws as long as I can control the supply of money. I guarantee you every government in the world understands the enormous truth in that statement. If they can control the supply of money, they can rule. They can't control the supply of gold. They can't manipulate gold the same way they do the paper currency. If we're going to have a new world order, it will be based on a fiat currency that has no intrinsic value.
I think for you and me, yes. But I think for their global trade, no. You will have some sort of stability in the currencies. Because I think there's countries like China that will demand it. And I think they're in a position now to where they, you know, they are in places when they do have control to where they can force something. And I believe that's how it will come about. Now, whether the powers to be are going to like it, that's another story. But for you and me and for business, yeah, they will continue with the fiat currencies.
Well, I think they'll even if they claim to have gold as part of their basket of currencies.
Because the thing it is, when it gets to the collapse, Al, I mean, I think then when this all this, what?
We won't see a global currency until we see a collapse, in
right.
my opinion.
Yeah.
We'll see a collapse, and then we'll see a global currency, if then. But I'm just saying, look, you want a real global currency that will actually provide stability, you want gold. And the governments, although that's what they profess, they don't want stability. They want influence, they want control, and that can be achieved by means of currency that can be printed by government. They can't do it with gold. Gold requires you to be responsible. Gold does not allow you to just spend it any way you want and agree to any idiotic program that any politician can imagine. Gold requires you to be responsible. And if you're not, you get thrown out of your job in disgrace. Fiat money requires you to be creative and inventive and fraudulent and deceptive and lying and engaged in theft and robbery and immoral. The government certainly, and I see no sign on the horizon of an approaching moral government.
I don't see anything in the near future either.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about eventually that is how it's going to have to play out.
Yeah. We'll watch and see how it all goes, but I'm just saying if you want a global currency right now,
because if they want to,
one that would work is gold.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And gold will be a major player. But on the other hand, I do believe they will have that set up in that manner. But and I just wanted to say we're getting ready to close. I'm not ready to close.
I think I may stay on for another hour.
I got an update in prices. And while we were on the air, Mint State 62 $20 gold pieces went up $15.
Is that right?
So I will still honor the previous price. So folks, give us a call. Get it while you can, and this will only be good for today. And the late night listeners, you can call and leave a message, and we'll get back with you if you want to get those prices locked in before Monday. So, yes, they went up $15. So, while you must have heard us talking.
Yep, we're moving the markets,
Melody.
We're
moving the markets.
We have to be careful about that. We're going to be competing directly with J.P. Morgan Chase. I'll probably be sending somebody down from the SEC to interview us. I know. What are you guys? You're not big time bankers. You can't move the markets. That's only the rich and important people can do that. You ordinary people can't do that. What else? We've got about a minute and 15 seconds, Melody. Huh? Got something?
You're the one.
I got something. Skating close to the edge again, the debt ceiling. This is from the Associated Press. Here they go again. As of Friday, the Treasury will no longer have authority to issue bonds necessary to pay the government's bills. What I'm getting, again, the sky is falling. The debt ceiling is falling. That's what we're talking about. Another one of these just dramas that are created. They are going to extend and increase the debt ceiling. It isn't even an issue. It's kind of a comedy. It's like watching the 1,000th issue of The Perils of Pauline. You know that she's going to get off the buzzsaw. All right? Snidely Whiplash is never going to get, I guess that's mixing our cartoons with movies, but the bad guy is never going to get Pauline. And there are never going to run out of the debt ceiling is never really going to be sealed in a way that it can't be exceeded. So the never-ending drama continues, and we will discuss it more on Monday when Melody and I return to financial survival. In the meantime, hope you all have a good weekend. May the good Lord bless every one of you and me and Melody and Frank the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.